Welcome to the Marriage Counselor's Corner. Right this way. Your therapist will see you shortly. In the meantime, sit back, kick your feet up on the couch, and get ready to focus on adding very valuable tools to your marriage toolkit. And now your host and marriage counselor, David Taylor.
Hey, hey. I'm back again, guys. And what's up? If you don't know, this is David Taylor, and I would like to formally welcome you to episode number 8 of the Marriage Counselor's Corner podcast. And guess what, guys? You are in for a treat, because I'm going to be dropping some more knowledge on some things that will take your marriage to the next level. But before we do, let's go ahead and get the formalities out the way. And again, I just want to say thank you for tuning in to another brand new episode of the Marriage Counselor's Corner podcast. My name is David Taylor, and I am your host. And this is the place where you will get credible and tangible marriage-related information from a licensed mental health counselor. Over the past 19 years of clinical experience, I have discovered some very important things, guys. I've been doing some research. I've been in the booth. I've been in the field. I've been grinding, and I've found some things, tools, resources that will take your marriage to the next level. And if you're interested in that, this is the place. This is the place to come and convene on the couch in the Marriage Counselor's Corner. So I want you to see these episodes as a masterclass in marriage, where I take a psychological and practical approach to marriage education and enrichment. And if you remember anything from my very first episode of this podcast, I talked about the importance of knowledge being the main reason that marriages succeed and ignorance being the main reason marriages fail. So take advantage of this information. Now, again, in today's episode, episode number 8, I'm going to be discussing a topic that is very, very, very important to your marriage. Actually, if you haven't read my book, or if you don't have my book, what's wrong with you? But whatever. If you haven't read my book, The 37 Laws to Mastering Marriage, this information will be important for you to remember. And if you've read my book, then this information will sound very familiar. As a matter of fact, if you want to turn to chapter 9 in your book, if you have it, you will find this information there. This will be a good refresher for you if you already have my book. If you don't have my book, well, this will be an introduction or a nice taste into what my book is all about, The 37 Laws to Mastering Marriage. But in any case, I want you to strap in because this information is going to be important. And I'm going to be talking about 4 bad habits that research has shown can absolutely ruin your marriage. Okay, so these aren't opinions. These aren't like, oh, these sound like good talking points. No, research vetted, thoroughly research vetted by probably one of the top researchers in the marriage space. And I'll talk about him in a minute. So here's your moment to go grab your notepads, your pen, or your book, your highlighter, and get ready to learn all about the 4 bad habits that can take your marriage and ruin it. It'll flush it right down the drain. Okay. And do me a favor, while you are listening to this episode, try to qualify yourself. Don't disqualify yourself. Try to qualify yourself. See if you are guilty of any of the things that I'm about to talk about. Okay. So without any further ado, let's dive in. So let me ask you guys a question. What are the 4 bad habits? What are those things that will cause your marriage to end? What has research shown that if you do more than you don't do can lead to the demise of your marriage? Is it infidelity? Is it money issues? Is it you failing to, you know, compliment your spouse? What's the 4 bad habits? Well, I want to talk a little bit about this. But before I do, I want to introduce you to someone that is very important to the relationship space, the psychology relationship space. His name is Dr. John Gottman. And if you've never heard of Dr. John Gottman, well, here's your introduction to him. But he's been doing research for the better part of 3 decades, probably 4 decades. He's in his 80s now. And he's the director of Seattle University's Love Lab. and the founder of the Gottman Institute. He's like the standard. So people who want to get trained in relationship space and they want to add some credentialings, they'll usually go to his institute and they'll get some certifications that will kind of let people know that they know what they're talking about, because this guy does. And like I said, he's been studying couples, thousands and thousands and thousands of couples, for the better part of over 3 decades now. And what he does is specifically to this topic, he'll have a couple come in to his love lab, and it's almost like they're in an apartment with two-way mirrors. So think of a reality show setup where they know they're being recorded, they know that they're being watched, and they're hooked up to different machines, or not really machines, but things are hooked up to their body that will measure their heartbeat, that will measure whether or not they are sweating, things like that. So there's a lot of metrics that are going into taking data. So not just recording like what they see, but also recording what's happening on a physiological level. And so he'll have couples come in and they'll stay for a day or two, and he'll just initially have them just, you know, make themselves comfortable. And then they'll eventually start talking about stuff. He'll maybe give them a topic to discuss. And eventually he'll start to see patterns in the conversation, patterns in the body language, patterns in what is actually going on. And the stuff that he finds is amazing. So what he does is he'll dissect every nuance of their interactions, from the eye rolls to the shoulder shrugs. And he's looking at the body language, the nonverbal cues, but he's also looking at what's actually being said at the moment that this person shrugged their shoulders. He's looking at their heartbeat. He's taking all of this data and recording it all at the same time. And he takes this data, he'll strip it. So he may take a 10-minute conversation, he'll strip it down to 1 minute, then he'll strip that 1 minute conversation down to, let's say, 10 seconds, right? He'll just splice it down, and then 10 seconds will be 1 second, and he's looking for micro expressions. And if you've never heard of micro expressions, there's a great book called Blink by Malcolm Gladwell, probably the best book that I've ever read on this subject of nonverbal cues and micro expressions. But he's looking at all of this stuff, and he comes up with these numbers, this research that's fascinating. And you can go to his website. I have dozens and dozens and dozens of these articles. And just like one of these sessions, I'm just going to have a nerd out session where I'm giving y'all all the stats on divorce, on marriage, everything. Because I got a lot of stats I can share with you guys. But what he's found is, and he can predict within the 94th percentile in terms of accuracy, whether or not a relationship will eventually dissolve based off of the findings of his data and his research. And he says he can even go to just like a random restaurant and just be keyed in on a couple that's having a conversation, and within 94% accuracy can predict whether or not that relationship will dissolve over the next 4 or 5 years. I mean, just fascinating stuff. And he's looking for only 4 things, right? So he's looking for 4 traits that he said has repeatedly turned up in his research and to be the most reliable predictors of a breakup, right? Especially when they're combined in some fashion. And he coined these terms, the 4 horsemen. And so if you look at my book, chapter 9 of the 37 laws to mastering marriage, this is one of the laws, right? Now, I didn't create this concept, which in psychology, we are learning from others. We're learning from those that are before us. But I found that this is one of those things that healthy couples don't do. They don't break these laws. And so chapter 9 of my book, The Law of the 4 Horsemen, is borrowed exactly from Dr. Gottman's research. And I've just found that this, if healthy couples don't do these things, unhealthy couples do these things literally on a daily basis. So I'm going to talk about these 4 horsemen. To failed relationships. He calls these the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse. That sounds a little bit dramatic, so I just labeled them the 4 horsemen to failed relationships. Or in my book, chapter 9, The Law of the 4 horsemen. But he found that there are 4 traits, only 4 things, okay? Not deep. So let me give you a list of these 4 things. First, I want you to guess. Let's have some fun first. Guess, write down, if you're writing, or just keep in your mind, if you, you know, be honest, what are the 4 things that you feel are the 4 horsemen, the things that Dr. Gottman discovered in his research? What do you think those things are? You got your list written down? All right, let me give you those four things, and then what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go through each of those four things, and then in the end, I'm gonna give you an action item, something that you can do to replace one of these four things. My guess is you will be guilty of at least one, most likely two, sometimes three of these. Don't be guilty of the fourth one, though. I'm just going to say that outright. Don't be guilty of this fourth one, because this one, he found, if you are guilty of this last one that I'll talk about in a minute, it will doom your marriage all by itself. So let's get started with the very first horseman. That first horseman is criticism. Did you guess it? It's criticism. Now, criticism involves attacking your partner's personality or character by saying things like, "You never help with the dishes," or "Why are you always so late?" Right? Saying things that attack who they are, their character, what they do. And criticism is a global condemnation of a person's character. And it often leads to the second horseman. Now, I'll talk about that in a minute, but back to criticism. Now, Dr. Gottman said that he found that women are more likely to be critical in relationships. And by the way, I would definitely agree with that, just based off of what I've gleaned over these last 19 years. Women in marriage tend to be more critical than men in marriage. Hear me clearly. Don't try to disqualify yourself. I want you to qualify yourself. I want you to be honest. Are you critical? Wives, do you have a habit of being more critical? And like I said, I found that often in relationships, especially in marriage, our partners are our looking glass. They become our mirrors. You've heard me talk about this in previous episodes. They reflect back to us who we are. The good, the bad, and the ugly, right? They reflect back to us the things that are in our hearts. And at our deepest level, I believe we often critique the very things in our spouses that we don't like in ourselves. And so if you're careful, you'll begin critiquing things in them that are often being reflected from them back to you. So you're seeing yourself in them, but you're critiquing you in them. Okay? So criticism is the first horseman. Now, again, I want you to think about this. I want you to qualify yourself. Do you have a habit of being critical? And let's be real. It ain't just the wives. Husbands, I'm talking to y'all too. We could be critical as well. Come home, the house ain't clean. Why so loud? Or why the laundry ain't put up? Or first thing you do before you greet your wife, you could be offering a criticism. Listen, I know I've been guilty of that as well. So just be honest and let's be real with each other, because these are things that research has shown, if they're present, can truly destroy your marriage. Okay? So let me go to the second horseman. It's defensiveness. Now, this is a good one as well. Okay, it's not good. You shouldn't be doing it, but it's an interesting one as well. I'll put it like that. Now, defensiveness often involves rebuffing your partner's complaint with your own. Now you see how criticism can cause defensiveness, because most likely if you're feeling like you're being criticized and you think that criticism is wrong or inaccurate, you're going to be defensive. You're going to defend yourself. You're going to protect yourself. Now, defensiveness sounds something like this. Like if someone says you're always late, your defense could be, I may be late, but you're way too uptight about it. Like it ain't that deep, right? Or you just did the same thing the other day. Like what's the big deal? Why are you pointing out something I did? You just did the same thing the other day. That could be defensiveness. And you can see how it's easy to be defensive. It's easily it just flows. Well, at least, am I telling on myself? I'm being real. It's easy to just defend yourself if you feel like your character is being attacked, okay? So just be aware of that. Now, because we are pain-avoiding creatures, we're pain-avoiding, pleasure-seeking creatures. That's how we are as humans. We automatically protect ourselves, right? If an eyelash gets in your eye, your body naturally is designed to fix and heal itself. Your eye will start to water, and eventually it'll flush that whatever is in there, that foreign object, out of your eye. And this is kind of how we do emotionally. Anytime we get a foreign object in our emotions, we become defensive as a way to help get that out of our system. And sometimes it is to our benefit, but often, if we're honest, it's to our detriment. Okay? So we automatically protect ourselves. And when we perceive that someone else is attacking our self-perception, almost by default, we feel compelled to protect it. It's almost like you don't even think about being defensive. It just comes out. And I could tell you stories for hours of sessions where I've just sat there and like a spouse would say something and then the other spouse, because they're listening with the intent to protect themselves, they'll immediately become defensive. I mean, they don't even think about it. And then I have to say, wait, let's walk through this. You should be looping right now instead of defending yourself. And then they'll realize, oh, shoot, you're right. Right? So it's easy to do. Sometimes we are defensive because our spouses have done a poor job with implementing the law of the safe place. Now, again, this law is in my book, The 37 Laws to Mastering Marriage, but it really just means that in order to be your best, most vulnerable self inside of the marriage, you need a place where you feel safe to do that. And the law of the safe place talks about this notion that safety and security produces vulnerability. Vulnerability produces intimacy. Intimacy produces influence. Read the chapter if you need more information on that. But really what it's saying is in the marriage, you need to be safe. But if you've done a poor job of creating a safe place, it's easier for your spouse to be defensive. Meaning, if you lead with criticism a lot, if you're very critical, husbands or wives, your spouse is most likely not going to feel comfortable being vulnerable with you because they're constantly being under the microscope, scrutinized, okay? And it'll be easier for them to be defensive because they are not safe with you, okay? So they got to protect themselves. So just be aware that if you're struggling with doing a good job being the safe place, they're going to be more defensive. Now, that's one reason, but other times we're defensive because of our own insecurities, right? And that's something we got to be honest about. If we're insecure or we know we have a weakness or a flaw and we don't like people pointing those out or even touching on that, then we could be defensive. I've seen where like a husband who struggles with managing the money and perhaps he makes poor decisions with the finances. The wife brings it up. He gets defensive. He shuts the conversation down. Now they're no longer able to have a healthy conversation because, well, he ain't want to talk about it. And you can see how things like criticism and defensiveness can be so dangerous to the marriage because we can't communicate. We can't connect. If you're always defensive or you always have a justification for what you do and you're never able to be, or it's rare for you to be accountable for your actions because you always have a defense, or it seems like you always have a defense, then it makes sense as to why the other person, the other spouse may shut down and they may be less likely to be vulnerable and submissive in that particular situation. So think about that again. Like, if you have your insecurities and you're struggling with your insecurities and you're protecting your insecurities, you may be isolating your spouse at the same time. So both defensiveness and criticism influence the third horseman. Because if I'm often critical or if I am often defensive, then this third horseman that Dr. Gottman found is, guess what? Stonewalling. And stonewalling is exactly what it sounds like. Stonewalling involves clamming up and refusing to hash out things with your partner, like just shutting down, okay, we're not going to talk about it. Or you get quiet and you just withdraw from the conversation. It literally is like putting a stone wall between you and your spouse. And what Dr. Gottman has found is that this is the classic go-to for men. So he's proven in his research that if women are more critical, men stonewall much, much more to a greater degree. Now, for men, I have found that if we were not trained to explore our emotions, we often avoid them altogether, right? As little boys, we're told not to cry, not to be sissies, right? That boys have to be strong, right? Especially if you're raised in the 70s or the 80s, and even in the 90s, you most likely acquired this message that boys have to be tough. Boys are not allowed to cry. Listen, if I were to ever get injured and cry, that ain't gonna happen, right? No, you're not gonna get injured and cry. Like if I got hit hard, I ain't crying. You gotta suck it up, Buttercup. I'm sure you guys have heard that. So think about what little boys learn. And, you know, they take this message with them into their adulthood. And it sends a subconscious message that expressing emotions is a sign of weakness. And so what we do, we avoid the pain. We shut down. And as a way of coping with the problem, we stonewall. After all, who wants to truly admit that their dirty laundry smells? Who wants to admit that, you know what, you got a little bit of you're a little overweight, or your breath smells, or you got a booger in your nose? Like, nobody wants to admit that. Like, nobody wants to hear the truth. And I found that, especially when it comes to emotions, men don't like to hear the truth. They don't even like to deal with where they are emotionally a lot of the times. And so what do they do? Well, they stonewall, they shut down. And unfortunately, as we grow older, we never truly mature in this area. Like, I know a bunch of older men, seasoned, good, you got your gray hair, you've earned it. But I know a bunch of seasoned men who still struggle with stonewalling. They just shut down. They don't allow themselves to share emotional space. So just because you're older don't mean you got better at this, men, okay? And then what happens is we contaminate our marital conflicts with the skewed sense of self-preservation. So just like defensiveness is a way to protect oneself, stonewalling is as well. It's like taking defensiveness up a notch, with the difference of now you're disconnected. Now you're not even engaged. And so you could see how stonewalling becomes very dangerous, because if women marry for connection, and my go-to when I'm defensive or when I'm frustrated is to stonewall, then I'm doing the very thing, I'm committing the very crime that will put my wife into a panic mode, because now she either goes into fight, flight, or freeze mode, right? So think about it. Husbands, if you're guilty of stonewalling and shutting down, what you're doing is inadvertently causing your wife to go into panic mode, because you're literally disconnecting from someone who's in the relationship to connect. Her most safe self feels safest when she's connected to you. But when you stonewall, you disconnect that safety, and then she becomes defensive or she becomes critical. And these are all of her ways of trying to re-engage the connection. But guess what? When you shut down, when you silence the conversation, she has no choice but to pull out the strings. And now she's pushing buttons. Now she's saying things. Now the tone goes up. And guess what? It can lead to this fourth and final horseman. Now, listen, criticism, defensiveness, and stonewalling, those are most likely things that you guys have found yourself, all of y'all have found yourself guilty of all of those at some point in your relationship. Okay, fair. That's okay. Okay, really, it's not okay. We need to do better. But Dr. Gottman says, don't be found guilty of this last horseman. He said, okay, if you're gonna make the mistake of introducing some of these horsemen, let it be one of the first three, but don't let it be this fourth. And what he's really saying is, please don't do none of these. But this fourth and final one, this is like cancer to your marriage. It will eventually, it's just a matter of time. If this is here, it's just a matter of time before your relationship ends in divorce. Now, I'm not saying that every single marriage that has this fourth and final horseman will end in divorce, but if you don't figure it out and you don't get better at this and you don't improve and you continue to make this mistake, well, guess what? Your marriage is only a matter of time. Now, Dr. Gottman says that this fourth and final horseman, guess what? It's called contempt. Now, he says, again, this last horseman is special in a bad way. Dr. Gottman says if he observed one or both partners in a relationship showing contempt towards the other, he considered it the single most important sign that the relationship was in trouble. Okay? This is major stuff. So I want you guys to be mindful of this. Contempt involves putting your partner down. So it's different than criticism. So contempt is like, you're stupid for believing that. Okay, now, no, you're not stupid. Y'all ain't stupid, okay? I'm saying that's what contempt sounds like. So if I were saying that to you, that would be contemptuous. That would be contemptuous language to say, like, you stupid for believing. That's dumb. Are you stupid? Are you dumb? Are you ignorant? Are you fool? Like, stuff like that. You know what? I just went in. I'm sorry. I just went in. I didn't mean it that. I didn't mean it that way. But you get what I'm saying. It's putting your partner down, saying things like that. But it also sounds like you. Why are you so fat? Or you're lazy. Or you are a bleep, right? If you curse at your spouse, anytime you called your spouse out of their name, anything like that, that's contemptuous language. And contempt differs from criticism in that it is made from a superior plane. So now you're speaking from a position of superiority where you lack respect for the other person. And if you read the great book, Love and Respect, and respect, men don't just need respect, by the way, women need respect as well. But if you read that book, Love and Respect, you know how important it is to a marriage, to safety and security. Now, if I'm positioning myself from a superior plane and I'm looking down my nose at you, I don't respect you. And people that use contempt, it usually goes hand in hand with physical abuse, right? You've usually found that if a person is physically abusing you, they're also verbally abusing you. I'm not saying that all contempt can be qualified as verbal abuse, but let's be real. There's a difference from saying someone is ignorant and stupid. Listen, that could be abusive as well. I'm not even gonna try to clean it up. It's that just don't say it because it could be abusive. Okay. but contempt is any comment made from a higher level. It debases the other individual. Contempt is closely related to disgust. And what disgust and contempt are all about is completely excluding someone from the community. So when you are using contemptuous language, you're excluding them. You're disconnecting yourself, but you're also separating yourself. So there's one thing to disconnect yourself. The next thing is to say, you know what? You're not even part of this inner circle, this group. And what I found is contempt can trigger past pain. It can trigger past trauma. And it can really lead to some ugly things being said and done in the relationship, which is why I say it is often associated with physical and verbal abuse. And any abuse, for that matter. Usually any abuse is done from a superior plane to from someone who feels like they're superior to a person that they feel is inferior to them. And contempt is one of the tools, one of the methods that they use for abuse. But again, don't think of it as just abuse, because most of you guys will then disqualify yourselves and say, well, I'm not abusive to my spouse. I may have called them out of their name once or twice, but I'm not abusive. Fair. Okay, great. You've just, you know, disqualified yourself from being abusive. But contempt, if that's you, you need to own it so that you can fix it. And you need to do it fast, like yesterday, okay? So having contempt towards your spouse makes it extremely difficult for them to even desire to cultivate a safe place with you. So if your marriage is a garden and you're using contempt to contaminate your soil, then your fruit will be rotten. It's just going to be rotten, okay? This is how it works. And nothing will grow because your spouse ain't going to want to have nothing to do with you. And if they still are with you, well, we need to talk. Okay, you know what? Let me stay focused. So there you are. Those are the four horsemen. We have criticism, defensiveness, stonewalling, and contempt. Now, I want to give you some action items. And if you've noticed, this podcast episode, today's episode is not going to be a long one because I gave you a bunch of long ones the last few episodes. So I want to keep this a little concise and brief. That way you can listen to it and then you can come back to it and listen to it again because you may need to take some notes. But I want to give you four things to do, one for each of these areas, one for each of these domains that if you did now would help with the bad habits that you've been implementing in your marriage. I want you to implement some positive, some good habits, okay? Now, to combat the four horsemen of failed marriages, you have to provide something that is equally as powerful, if not more. Now, this strategy, if you're reading from my book, The Strategy of the Law of the Horsemen, The Law of the Four Horsemen, this strategy is based on the core attribute of unconditional love that is discussed in the law of agape. So if you remember my first podcast episode or maybe the second one where I talked about unconditional love, when I did the 10 pillars and I talked about agape love, Well, that concept is taken from the first chapter of my book, The Law of Agape. And The Law of Agape, if you have read that chapter correctly, you'll realize that that is all about giving. Agape or unconditional love is all about giving. As a matter of fact, I define unconditional love in the marriage as to give all that I have all the time. But maybe I'll put more emphasis on it this way: to give all that I have all the time. So in order for you to combat the four horsemen, you will definitely have to give something that is equally or more powerful. And I understand that for every one negative, especially in a conflict, you're going to need at least 5 to 13 positives to counteract that weight. If you're used to being critical or defensive or stonewalling or contemptuous every now and again, you're going to need to add a lot of positivity. You're going to need to balance out some things. So here's what I want you to do with regards to criticism. So instead of criticism, I want you to compliment. Instead of criticizing your spouse, compliment them. Now, you may say, so, but what if there's a situation where I need to be a little bit more like critical, or I got to tell them that they did something wrong? Well, fair, as long as you lead off with a compliment. Start with a compliment first. And if you can add in two or three before you nestle in that criticism, you'll be good. Think about it from this standpoint. Give your spouse a compliment in place of the criticism that you were looking to give, because humans love to be validated. And remember, men marry for the validation of their masculinity and for a sense of significance. So even more so for the man, he's going to need to be validated. Women too. Husbands, don't forget about your wives. Give a compliment in place of the criticism. Think about it. We love validation so much that we often do things to solicit validation from others. So complimenting your spouse validates them. And most of the time, they will continue to react in ways that are consistent with what they feel is appropriate enough to receive even more validation from you. We learn this as little kids, okay? And as parents, we do this all the time with our kids. When my daughter cleans her room, what do? I don't go in there and say, well, you know what, Pooh, your bed, your covers are still wrinkled, and I know you tried to clean up the floor, but you pushed your toys into a corner. I could say that, but instead I go in and say, wow, Pooh, oh my goodness, did your mother come in? Mommy must have helped you, right? You know, and I'll gas her up, because I know that what she'll do is associate the behavior with the feeling that she's feeling from the compliment. And guess what? She'll go above and beyond to repeat that behavior because she likes how it feels to get the compliment, to get the validation. Remember, humans are pain-avoiding, pleasure-seeking creatures. It's in our nature to seek pleasure, to seek things that look good, taste good, and feel good. I'm not saying that's always good. Now, don't get it twisted, but it's in our nature. So if you could leverage our nature in a healthy manner, it works even in your marriage. Okay. I'm giving y'all some tools. Some of y'all, it went right over your head, but just repeat that. It'll make sense. But again, most of the time they will continue to react in ways that are consistent with what they feel is appropriate enough to receive the validation. So if you want him to wash the dirty dishes that he agreed to do a week ago, well, if they still there a week ago, we got another problem. But you get the point. You get the point. Don't criticize him on how lazy he is. Instead, compliment him on how well he has done taking out the trash. Find something. And wives, I know, but find something that you can validate him in first before you just rip him apart. Okay? Now, let me move forward, because I said I was going to be brief and your boy was about to get on another tangent. Okay, so here's what you do for defensiveness. Now, instead of being defensive, demonstrate vulnerability. And I know this is a hard one, but you're going to have to demonstrate vulnerability, because safety and security leads to vulnerability, and vulnerability leads to intimacy. And when I say intimacy, I'm not just talking about physical intimacy. There are 7 types of intimacy. So check out the book if you need more help on that. But if you are vulnerable, it opens up the relationship to have more intimacy. See, think about it from this standpoint. If you incorporate this strategy, it keeps you from interfering with your spouse's ability to influence you. Because remember, marriage is about intimacy and influence. And safety and security leads to vulnerability. Vulnerability leads to intimacy. Intimacy leads to influence. You see how that works? So if they're holding you accountable for something that you know you did wrong, accept the reprimand and own up to your mistake. Don't deflect because of your discomfort. Embrace it. That way, they will feel more comfortable or safe holding you accountable, and they will tend to emulate the same vulnerability that you are demonstrating if you do it effectively. So this is how you add influence to your marriage. Be the change that you want to see, and it has to start with you. So instead of being defensive, I want you to practice being vulnerable. And if you're having a difficult time with that, send me an email, text me, call me, and we can talk about it. Because especially for my men, I need y'all vulnerable. As men, we have to be vulnerable, okay? I know we strong, a bunch of gorillas walking around beating our chest, but we still got to be vulnerable, okay? All right, let me move to the third one, which is stonewalling. And instead of stonewalling, schedule a convenient time to have that difficult conversation. Just schedule it. So instead of shutting down and withdrawing from the conversation and leaving your spouse just floating out there waiting to hear back from you, just, hey, let's pick a time that's better or more convenient to have this conversation. Because maybe the timing is off, right? And think about it. Your spouse, they may have a desire to discuss a certain serious topic regarding the marriage, but maybe their timing is off. Maybe their tone is off. Maybe their energy is off. That doesn't mean that you should shut down because you don't want to have the conversation. Instead, offer to schedule a more efficient time to have the conversation so that you can gather your thoughts and your energy and be fully present during the conversation. And make sure that you pick a time that works for both of y'all, not just you, for both of y'all, okay? All right, let me go to this last one. And then guess what, guys? We are going to wrap it up, okay? So the fourth and final one is contempt. And instead of demonstrating contempt, give confidence to your spouse. Remember, contempt is spoken from a superior plane, okay? So you're stripping them of their confidence. But instead, now you're giving them confidence. And you can only give someone confidence that you see value in, okay? And again, I'm not talking about being fake and flaky. I'm talking about genuine and authentic. You can only genuinely give a compliment if you see value in what they have or what they're doing. Okay? So when you use contempt, you are in a sense stealing confidence away from them. You're tearing them down in such a way that makes them feel insecure. To avoid this, push them higher by doing and saying things that will make them feel more confident. It could be complimenting them. It could be honoring their role in your life. It could be putting them before you. It could be even admitting that you made a mistake and offering to have them help you do better. Okay? No matter the case, resist debasing them by always looking to lift them higher. Your spouse is not beneath you. Okay, husband? Okay, wife? They are your equal. You guys are on the same plane. And you should always lift them higher. The Bible says it this way. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. So I can't, and my wife, we are one. You and your spouse are one. So you can't tear them down without tearing you down because y'all are one. Okay? Marriage is all about oneness. So instead of giving contemptuous energy, give a compliment. Lift them higher. Put them above or before you so that you're not speaking from a superior plane. And admit that you were wrong. Apologize. Okay? So, there you have it. I thought this was going to be less than 40 minutes, and it looks like I'm still at 40 minutes. So, I'm going to wrap up here. You have some action items. Please, please, guys, go back and listen to this if you need to. Also, go out and pick up my book, The 37 Laws to Mastering Marriage. You can get it on Amazon, You can get it from the website, MasteringMarriageLaws.com. You can get the paperback. You can get the ebook version. There's even an audiobook version that was narrated by someone who has a beautiful voice. And listen, I know I'm saying, I don't know if you're going to hear this, the podcast, but the man got a voice, okay? I'm just going to put that out there. But check this book out. You don't even have, but listen, it don't even have to be my book. Go Google Dr. Gottman, go to his website, and look up his work. He has access to thousands of research articles. So ignorance should not be an excuse at this point. Go and find information, okay? And I'm going to keep making it simple for you by pushing out this content. Anyway, I do want to wrap up here and say thank you guys again for coming to your session at the Marriage Counselor's Corner. I want you to join me in the next episode, where, of course, we're going to talk about another important topic. I don't know what it is now, because this podcast episode was actually not lined up to be episode this episode, but I just moved some things around because I thought this was pertinent. So I don't know what I'm going to do for the next episode, but I got some heat for you. I just don't know which heat I'm going to give you. So make sure that you have subscribed to this podcast. Listen, I'm seeing a trend. I see a lot of iPhone users listening to this podcast. Where are my Android users at? Are y'all like listening to it from your buddy iPhone or something? Because I know there's Android users out there. Listen, you can subscribe anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Go to Spotify. That's a great place to go. Download the podcast app. That's another great place to go. And it's free, so you ain't got to pay for it. And make sure that you're subscribing, liking, commenting, leave your ratings and your reviews. That's the only way people can hear this. More people rather can hear this. And then also, please don't forget to go to marriagecounselorscorner.com. So that's a website. If you have questions for my Q&A podcast episode, I think that's going to be in the next one, matter of fact, a Q&A episode. So go to Marriage Counselors Corner podcast if you want me to answer your question. Otherwise, guys, keep up the good work. Stay focused. Continue to educate yourself. Stay out of trouble, and I'll talk to you soon. Deuces.
Thanks for stopping by for your seat on the couch at the Marriage Counselor's Corner. Remember, go to marriagecounselorscorner.com to schedule your next session. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so that you never miss a session. We look forward to having you back on the couch soon. Bye-bye now.